As you can see from your bulletin, today's presentation, and as we've had the blessed opportunity, I'm grateful for Derek Isaacs, who's sitting right there with his lovely wife, Tabitha. I met them through Anniston Bible Church at that Iron on Iron. And as Derek is a part now of, for the last several months, I guess, as he's an apologist, he's an author, and as he's written on apologetic subjects, particularly the creation, CMI likes to maximize their time and have more than one church. And as Bob St. John has had scheduled the evening service, it fell providentially in our laps to have this and so I was very quick to say, well, I got to make a snap decision, so let's go ahead and have it. And the Sunday school was a tremendous blessing. We had our speaker, Brother Scott Gillis, bring us a message concerning dinosaurs in the Bible. It was very educational and edifying, and the Lord was glorified in it, and so we're so blessed. But I'm going to just give it on over to Brother Scott. He'll tell you all about himself and bring us the message in creation impacting our culture. So, Brother Scott, it's great to have you with us today.
All right, thanks very much. Well, so for you that are not acquainted with Creation Ministries International, I want to introduce you to our organization. We have offices in 7 countries. We truly are international. And our purpose is to be an information ministry to the church. We make over 1,200 presentations like this every year in churches all over the world. Our flagship publication, Creation Magazine, goes out to over 110 countries. Now, our website address is hard to remember, but I'm going to show it to you, and I want you guys to all repeat it back to me so it becomes imprinted in your mind, okay? So everybody together, creation.com. Can you remember that?
Creation.com.
Right. So our website, it's a free and amazing resource. And if you went to our topics button here, you'd find over 7,500 articles. It's the world's best archive on information about the evolution and creation issue. And let's say you have a tough question. Maybe it's in biology class, or maybe even a family member comes up, a coworker possibly, and challenges a straightforward belief in the Bible. Chances are, there's an answer here on the website for you. For example, you guys know this fellow? Who is it? Steve Irwin, the croc hunter, right? And we did get some tragic news from him a number of years ago. What happened?
Dead.
Dead, and how?
Stingray
to the heart, correct. And a lot of people wrote into our ministry. They sent us emails, you know, people that were skeptical of what we believe in taking the Bible as it's written. And they sent this challenge, and they said, why would a loving God create stingrays that can kill? And you know what? That's actually a really good question. But let me ask you this. Do you have a good answer for that today? It's kind of going back to Apologetics 101. Why would a loving God allow death and suffering? Well, people were seeking answers to this specific question. They searched the internet and they found this CMI article gave a biblical and a scientific answer to this tough question. In only 10 days, it became our most visited website article ever. And how did that happen? Because people like you, seeing that there's a biblical answer to these tough questions, were forwarding this article onto family and friends, both believers and non-believers. You guys read the newspaper often where you hear about the latest dinosaur or ape man discovery that allegedly proves that evolution is true. Have you guys seen articles like that? How would you like to get a scientific and a biblical response to those articles sent directly to your email? That's what we're here to do. We're trying to show you that there is a biblical answer to these questions. And I'm going to have Derek, he's going to pass out these sign-up sheets here. And I want everybody here to sign up for our free emails newsletter called InfoBytes. You know, give it a try. If you don't like it, you can always unsubscribe. But right now, go ahead and sign up for this. And you'll be kept up to date and have the latest news about creation and evolution. Okay? By the way, you saw the book tables out here. Lots of information. I want to make sure that you understand our purpose in coming isn't to make money, because our ministry is an information ministry to the church. You know, kids hear about evolution 24/7. You know, and if they don't hear, where are they going to hear a biblical answer? It's going to be on television, Is that where they're going to find that? When they go to high school, college, are the answers going to be there? Once you know our part, for over 30 years, the testimonies that we've gotten from this information, for instance, in our email newsletter and our books and DVDs, are because people like you have shared this information with a neighbor, a family member, even your own children, in order to uplift their faith. The evidence today that you're going to hear is going to be from Creation Magazine, for the most part. And we're going to talk a little bit later about how to get that. But before we get going, I want to talk about this free website resource again. It is what?
Creation.com.
All right, great. So let's go ahead and get started with this presentation. Now, there's one thing I don't know if they told you. I'm actually an international speaker of sorts because I'm actually from a different country. I don't know if you've heard of this country. It's completely different than this one. It's a country called California. At the same time, I don't want you to judge me too harshly. I met my beautiful bride from California when I was living in Oregon, and we came back there. I've lived actually all across the country. So I was not a native Californian when I came into this very different society. But I wanted to be just like those Californians. I wanted to blend in and become part of the culture. In order to prove that, I just want to let you know that I became part of that society. And here's evidence of me catching a wicked 12-inch wave. That's about as big as I got. But I want to introduce you to my friend Sammy here. Now, Sammy is a native Californian, born and raised there. He's a real man. He meets the stereotype that you think of. He was not only an avid surfer, but he was a professional trained beach lifeguard. All right? Now, he was riding his quad all day long down on Pismo Beach one day. On the sand dunes, he was exhausted. The sun was setting. It was time to get back to camp, and he was completely drained of energy. When he came to this very spot on the beach, there was a crowd of about a dozen people standing there as the sun was going down. It was starting to get dark. And they were jumping up and down, signaling for him to come over. They assumed that he was a lifeguard, and indeed he was, but he was off duty at the time. He came over and he said, "What's up?" And as soon as the motor stopped, he heard a man crying, "Help!" He was over 100 yards off of the beach there. The waves had 8-foot faces at the time. And he went under, and they couldn't hear him anymore. And this crowd says, "Do something." So they took off all his gear. He was able to catch a rip current, go out that 100 yards, and with his last bit of strength that he had, he was able to bring this man back and saved him, while everyone else just stood on the beach and watched. So I have a question for you this morning. Why was Sam the one that did it while everyone else watched? Why? He had the ability. He was trained. He was equipped. He thought, "I think I can make it." Nobody else. Everybody else was scared. Our culture is kind of like that surf. The waves are like those tough questions that both unbelievers and even our children are asking, struggling, looking for purpose and meaning in life. They're asking questions like, "Is there a God? Does he love me? And is the Bible true?" Those are the questions that people are asking in our culture. And you know what? The world is answering that question. They're saying, "No, Bible's not true. Science has proven that the Bible is wrong." And oftentimes, as part of the church, we gather by the shore and we talk about the people that are perishing in these tough questions and waves. But are you guys prepared right now to be the one that dives in to save the perishing while everybody else watches? 1 Peter 3:15 says, "Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you, to give the reason for the hope that you have." Now, is this a suggestion or a command? This word right here, "answer," is the Greek word apologian. It's actually a legal term that lawyers would use in the court of law. It means it's a reasoned, rational, logical defense. Like a lawyer would argue in order to convince the jury that his case makes more sense than the other side. So when you read this command, does this sound like you? Are you always prepared? are you always equipped with that argument? Are you ready to convince people that the Bible is true? You know, a lot of people think that this creation evolution issue is kind of a side issue. That's what most Christians really believe. You know, there's many more important issues that the church needs to deal with. You know, for instance, sharing the gospel. And, you know, I completely agree. That's very important. But today I want to see if we can convince you that it's not only a foundational issue to the church, but foundational to you. Some of you might be surprised by some of the things you hear today. So fasten your seatbelt and hold on. We're going to go ahead and take a look at the opening chapter of the Bible, which is found where? Genesis. And we're going to contrast the Bible's account of history and compare it with the version of history that's taught to our kids in the schools, through the media, Discovery Channel, PBS, and even in our universities. All right? Let's start out with biology. A lot of people go, what do you mean biology in the Bible? But did you know that in Genesis 1, the term after their kind occurs 10 times? It says God created animals and plants to reproduce after their kind. What that basically means is that dogs give birth to dogs and pigs give birth to pigs. Now, is that a biological statement? Sure it is. It's dealing with genetics, in fact. You know, you pass your genes on to the next generation. On the other hand, the biology that our kids are taught in school says that through natural selection and mutations, and over millions of years, one kind of animal changes into a completely different kind. So you see, if the biology that our kids are taught in school is true history, then the Bible's biology is a myth. Stay with me here. Geology. Have you guys seen news reports where a flood tears out an entire road and bridges are destroyed, like what's actually happening right now in Australia, if you're keeping up with the news? Take a look at what's happening. Amazing destruction. But you might have known that the Bible talks about an incredible worldwide flood. It caused catastrophic destruction. It covered the entire planet. Now, do you think that might impact geology a bit? Sure, there would be deposition of sedimentary layers and massive erosion all over the world. Now, on the other hand, the geology that our kids are taught in school says that the mountains, the valleys, and the canyons occurred over slow, gradual processes over millions of years. In fact, they're taught that there was no catastrophic worldwide flood, that it was impossible. So once again, take note. If the geology that our kids are taught in school is true history, then the geology of the Bible is a myth. Let's take a look at astronomy. The Bible says that in the beginning that the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the water. So according to the Bible, if we take it as it written, the world was originally a global ocean and land did not appear until day three. Now, does anybody know the theory of astronomy that kids are taught? What's that called? Astronomy. Yeah, did I say astrology? Oh, okay, I said astronomy. Yeah, the Big Bang. Which in a nutshell means that there was nothing and it exploded and that created everything. But according to the Big Bang, the Earth was a hot molten blob. And not until millions of years later did water appear. By the way, according to the Big Bang, the stars and the sun came before the Earth. But what does the Bible say? Earth came before the stars and the sun. So once again, take a look. If the world's astronomy is true history, then the Bible's astronomy is a myth. And you want to know what? Our kids, the kids in this culture, they see this contradiction. They're smart. They can figure out that both of these things can't be true, and they're so diametrically opposed, you can't blend them together. On one hand, they have their science teachers and their professors telling them real answers to show that their view of geology, biology, and astronomy is true history. They say, this is science. Let me tell you, this is science. But then they talk about the Bible and they go, the Bible? No, that's not science. That's religion. You know that? And so they come to church and they hear stories about Adam and Eve, Noah and the ark, Jonah and a big fish, You know, unless we connect these stories to real world history, what's going to happen? Today, do you have a reasoned, rational, logical defense to these challenges of a straightforward reading of the Bible? And if we, here today, as parents, grandparents, and those that are in our family are not equipped with that defense to show that the Bible can be taken as it's plainly written, it's true, what's going to happen? You know, is it any wonder, have you guys heard this statistic from the Barna Institute that says that 70% of Christian children will leave the church at about the age of 18? Anybody heard that? You know, I have four children. Does that mean that three of my kids are going to walk away from the faith? And if this statistic is true, are we talking about someone else's children? Or could it be ours? Now, to be fair, when this survey came out, there were four other surveys that went out asking the same question, different denominations and different groups, and they came up with different statistics. But let me ask you a question this morning. What percentage would be acceptable to you? Now, if you had a wound right now and you were losing half of your blood, would you do something about it? Yeah, you wouldn't be just sitting here going, whoa, I guess I'm bleeding. No, you'd be taking action. But folks, guess what? The church right now, if these statistics are true, are bleeding our kids. What's it going to look like in three generations? Not just our kids. What about our family? Does anybody here have unsafe family members? You know, this evolution creation issue is an important issue to us reaching that, because they're saying the Bible isn't true. Now, some of you are thinking, why did this guy come into the church? I came today to have an uplifting message. What a bummer. But I have good news for you this morning. There is a reasoned, rational, and even scientific defense for taking the history of the Bible as it's plainly written, as God clearly wrote in Genesis. And when we are equipped with that information to those challenges, and we can logically demonstrate to our friends, our family, and even our own children that the Bible is historically accurate, then we can share the gospel of Jesus Christ. You know where is that gospel found? In the Bible, right? Both stories are in the same Bible. Do we get to pick and choose which ones we believe in? You know, people know that this is a problem. Jesus himself said, I've spoken to you of earthly things and you do not believe. How then will you believe if I speak of heavenly things? That's why we're here today. CMI employs more scientists than any Christian ministry in the world. And our goal is to equip believers like you with a scientific and a biblical defense to show that the history of the Bible can be taken as God clearly wrote. Now, how many people here have heard that evolution is science while creation is religion? Have you guys ever heard that? Yeah, I hear that all the time. But you got to understand, this term science can be kind of tricky. You know, for instance, let's say that you're watching the National Geographic Channel, a program all about science, and they have somebody with that really cool, low-pitched British accent. You know, this is science, and this is that, and they're talking about science this and science that, and look here, and here's science, and science, and science. Did you know they're actually using two different definitions of the word science? And they're switching back and forth between those definitions, and they don't tell you when they're doing it. Let me explain to you what I mean. See, there's a lot of confusion in the creation evolution debate when it comes to this term science. See, on the one hand, we have one kind of science called operational science. You know those experiments that you might have done in junior high or high school? You know, let's say that you did not believe in the law of gravity. Okay, we could do an experiment. Okay, you guys could take me up on top of the building and you guys could gather out in the parking lot and have all of your stopwatches, scales, video cameras, time-lapse photography and everything. And Pastor could take me and kind of give me a little push. And then you could measure the speed that I dropped, the amount of time it took, the rate of gravitational acceleration. And then if you're a true scientist, you'll make your observations, record your data, and then you can repeat the experiment. Oh, well, okay, you couldn't repeat that experiment, but, you know, then we could take, you know, the pastor and use him. But you see, that's what operational science is. It's observing, recording, repeating. It's the kind of science that brings us space shuttles and iPhones and the medical advances that benefit mankind. But listen up, when we're talking about evolution, it's not this kind of science. There's a different definition that they're using. Historical, or you might call it forensic science. Now let's say that you believed in the past that a fish walked onto land. Can you do an experiment to prove that happened? Can you observe it? Can you repeat it? Do you see how this can cause confusion? It's very important that you understand this. Let me go further here. This is a fossil. Somebody tell me, in a nutshell, what is a fossil? Thank you. That's an excellent answer. It's basically evidence of a dead thing. All right? Now, those people that were not in Sunday school this morning, I'll ask a question. Does this fossil exist in the past or the present? Does this fossil exist in the past or the present? It's in the present, right here. It's real, okay? You see, all of the evidence that we have exists in the present right now. We do not have a time machine. When we dig up a fossil, it doesn't come with a label that talks about how old it is or what species it was. You see, listen up, you have to take the evidence that exists in the present and paint a picture of what happened in the past. The evidence does not speak for itself. It must be interpreted. Does that make sense? Okay, let's take another quiz. All right? With a show of hands, who has the most evidence, evolution or creation? How many people say evolution has the most evidence? Raise your hand. How many people think creation has the most evidence? All right. Let me ask you a follow-up question. Do we have the same fossils to observe or different fossils? Same. Do we have the same biological evidence or different biological evidence? Do we have the same geological formations or different? Can I ask the question again? Who has the most evidence, evolution or creation? It's the same evidence. Okay, I got some deer in the headlights looks out there. So let's see if we can dry this on. Let's try it with this other quiz. Maybe this will help you. I want you to make observations on this fact. Everybody take a look at this fact. All right? Record that. What's missing is the question we're going to be dealing with today. What was this originally? All right? I'm going to make it easier. So with a show of hands, how many people think that it used to be A? Okay. B. Anybody think it was B? All right. How about C? Okay, we got an optimist in the crowd right up here. How about D? How many people thought it was D? Right. Want to know the answer? Why did you think something was missing? Why? Somebody tell me.
When you ask the question.
This is the way I asked your question. See, I told you to look for something missing. Okay? I gave you a starting assumption to use to look at the evidence. Now, your interpretation was completely consistent with your starting assumption. Congratulations, that's what a real scientist should be doing. And your conclusion was completely consistent with your observation. Way to go. But you were completely wrong. Now, some of you are going, well, wait, you tricked me. Well, that's the point. You see, the same thing happens when you're watching the Discovery Channel or PBS, a science program. You're not just given facts. You're given a starting assumption and an interpretation based on those facts. Historical science, you know that program that's on television called CSI? You know, where the scientists collect the evidence and they look for clues, right? And after they've collected all this evidence, they give it to the attorneys. Now, the attorneys are both given the exact same evidence and clues. Now, what each attorney is going to do is tell a story about the past that they did not observe, all right, and present that story to the jury and try to convince the jury that their story makes more sense than the other attorney's. And they're also going to try to discredit the story that the other attorney is telling. But, folks, in this case, The jury is our kids and those unbelievers in our culture that we're trying to read. And guess what? They only hear one side. And if they don't hear the biblical side from somebody, you know, could it be us? Could we be the ones to tell them the other side? When it comes to this evolution issue, we're going to take a look at some observational evidence that makes sense of the history of the Bible, okay? Just a little bit, just a touch. And we'll start out with the Grand Canyon, which is a great place to take a vacation, by the way, I might want to add. Now, I was taught that the layers in the Grand Canyon took millions of years, okay? Now, if you do look at the observational processes today, sedimentation does indeed happen very slowly. Those layers take a long time. And if it's true that what happens today happened in the past, then the rock layers in the Grand Canyon must have taken hundreds of millions of years. But did you know that the evidence in the Grand Canyon shows that the massive layers that we observed there were actually laid down by water? And what do we observe in those sedimentary layers? Fossils, dead things. And where do we find those layers? I mean, indeed at the Grand Canyon. But have you guys gone and seen the road cuts, you know, when they put in highways and you can see the layers? There's sedimentary layers all over the world, everywhere. So let me ask you this question. Can you think of anything in the Bible that would explain massive sedimentary layers laid down by water containing the evidence of dead things all over the world? Anything at all that might explain that? Yeah, how about that flood? Now, a lot of people, when they talk, oh, a worldwide flood, please, there's not enough water to have a worldwide flood. Well, remember back in junior high school? Take a look at this. Do you remember that the earth is covered, the surface of the earth is 70% water? In very deep oceans. In fact, if you took all of the mountains and lowered them and all of the ocean basins and brought them down so that our planet were a sphere like a basketball, did you know there'd be almost 2 miles of water covering the entire planet? Sound like enough water to you? In fact, did you know that we find marine aquatic fossils in the sedimentary layers of the highest mountain ranges in the world, including the Himalayas and the Andes, at the very top, in sedimentary layers, the highest mountains in the world? This is evidence that demonstrates that those layers were once under the oceans, as scientists now agree, but the mountains were pushed up just as God's word describes. Isn't that amazing? Now, speaking of layers, I was taught that each of these thin layers of strata took maybe a year to form. And then when you added up all these years, it would take millions of years. But once again, let's take a look at observational science. Now, right here, we have 24 feet of thousands of fine layers of rock. Now, did this section take millions of years or thousands of years? Maybe hundreds of years. This section here took 3 hours, June 12th, 1980. A month after the first eruption of Mount St. Helens, which made a direct impact on me. This is some of the ash that was in my front yard because I live 65 miles from that mountain, and it was 3 inches thick everywhere. Also, by the way, Mount St. Helens is a great vacation spot. But anyhow, if you were to go and take a vacation up there, what you'd find is a canyon that's 1/40th the scale of the Grand Canyon. Now, did this take millions or thousands of years, or as we're told? Now, it happened in one day, March 19th, 1982, and it rocked the imaginations of scientists all over the world. You see, if we stumbled upon this canyon without knowing and observing what happened, and we saw this little tiny river, this is 600 feet wide and about 100 feet deep, we would think that that little tiny river took a really long time to carve that canyon. But we know that's not the case. It really makes you wonder what would happen if there truly was a global flood, as the Bible tells us. In Creation Magazine, we talk about the Grand Canyon quite a bit because there's lots of evidence that points to that biblical model that rapid deposition of sedimentary layers laid down by water and rapid erosion are the cause of the Grand Canyon. Now, a lot of guys say, okay, you creationists, you say you follow the observational science, but you ignore the evidence. I had a guy come up and say, you're just ignoring it. And I go, huh? What do you mean? He goes, well, look at fossils. It takes millions of years to form a fossil. See, science blows away your Bible. There's no way. No way. You don't have enough timeline in the Bible to make up for this. You know, how do you answer a question like that? I see those questions as a great opportunity. And I hope that you can too. So let's try this out. How do we get a fossil? All right? Let's take a little bit of a lesson. Went to this museum display here, and here's this dinosaur who dies. He sinks. He rots. And gradually, over periods of time, sedimentary layers bury him, becomes a fossil. And then through either erosion or even an archaeological dig, okay, they find this fossil. And you know, that used to make sense to me. It seems pretty reasonable. You know, even that's what we're taught in the museums. And I thought that was right. But let's take a look at some observational science, shall we? Now, does anybody here have a fishbowl or fish tank at home? Anybody? Somebody back there. See, I went, when my daughter was young, I went to Walmart and I bought her a couple of goldfish. And we got a bowl like this, and she was very proud of Romeo and Juliet. And she took care of them and fed them, and I told her, you know, you have to give them not too much food. And we gave all the instructions so that they grow up to be healthy goldfish. And 3 days after we bought it was a Saturday morning, which is when I enjoy sleeping in, and all of a sudden I hear a scream. Daddy, Daddy, come here, quick! And I run in there. I'm dazed. I'm looking. She says, look at the goldfish. And she says, Romeo is kissing Juliet. And I go up close, and I wasn't very tactful with my daughter. I said, no, honey, Romeo is eating Juliet. You see, there's Juliet floating on top. Let me ask you said you had the fish tank in the back. What happens when fish die? Where do you find them? Floating on the top, almost all the time. Now that's in a fish tank, but what about in the real ocean? Have you guys seen these high-definition documentaries where they're sweeping across the bottom of the ocean? You see all the colorful fish and everything, and littered across the bottom of the ocean are dead fish just laying there waiting to be buried and spend millions of years becoming fossils. Is that what you see? No, of course not. You know, they're scavenged. So if you really want to have a fossil, okay, what you really need is not gradual layers allowing that fish to decompose. You need to bury it really, really quickly. So if you do have a goldfish in a bowl and you want to make a fossil of them, the way you do it is take a shovel of concrete and throw it in there really fast. I'm just kidding. Don't do that at home, kids. I was just kidding. But is there any evidence that shows that this rapid burial of creatures is what caused fossils? Well, take a look at this. Here's a fish that was buried so fast, it was caught right in the middle of having its lunch. How about this? Here's an ichthyosaur. Fossilized in the middle of giving birth. Now, ladies, I've heard of difficult labors, but can you imagine it taking thousands of years just waiting as you're giving birth in order to be buried? And no, you see, this is evidence showing that rapid burial happened. Now, can you think of anything in the Bible that might cause catastrophic rapid burial of great layers of animals like this? You know, in Creation Magazine, we show all the time new evidence that shows that fossils came from rapid and catastrophic burial. Now, some of you are going, okay, Scott, I get that. I agree with the quick burial, and by the way, most scientists do today as well. But it obviously takes thousands, if not millions, of years for the process of permineralization, that's turning something living or organic into stone. It takes a long time to do that. But, once again, are there any examples of fossils that form in less time? Well, in Creation Magazine, you'd find this fossil hat. It was buried for 20 years. You might say it evolved from a soft hat into a hard hat. Or here we have a fossilized bag of flour. We even have a fossilized teddy bear. You see, we have evidence all the time that's contrary to this idea that it takes millions of years to get a fossil. Now, how many people here have heard the idea that each day in Genesis represents millions of years? Has anybody ever heard that idea? Yeah, it's very popular. to adapt the millions of years into the Bible. And some people tell me at this point, wait, you're getting too controversial here. What's wrong with the millions of years? The Bible, after all, is a book of morality. Why don't you stick to the important doctrines of the Bible? But does adding millions of years impact any important doctrines of the Bible? Well, let's see. Once again, a fossil is what? It's a dead thing, evidence of a dead thing. And where do we find those fossils? Everywhere in those sedimentary layers. And if those sedimentary layers took millions of years, and if we are trying to squeeze those millions of years into Bible history, where do we put it? Now, you know those biblical genealogies that you read? You know, so-and-so gave birth, begat so-and-so, begat so-and-so, begat... You guys really enjoy those sections? In my Bible reading day before yesterday, I had one of those things talking about going on and on and on. But what's the purpose of those genealogies? Because there's quite a few of them. It's to show that Jesus, who was a real man, descended from Adam, who was also a real man. You see, and if you take those biblical genealogies, you do some simple math, add up the ages and the generations, the Bible gives a reliable time span from Adam to Jesus. Does that make sense? You just do the math. And if that's true, and you need to put the millions of years into the Bible, and you have a reliable time span from Adam to Jesus, where must you put the millions of years? Huh? Before Adam. But there's a problem now. You see, if these fossils that are in those layers that allegedly took millions of years are evidence of dead things, that means you had death before Adam. Death before the fall. Death before the curse of sin. Now, does that sound like it's an important doctrine of the Bible to you? Let's take a look at it even further here. In the last verse of Genesis 1, God said for the seventh time, he said his creation was very good. Now, what does a very good world look like? Okay, check this out. A couple verses earlier, God said, I give you plants for food. So if we take the Bible as it's clearly written, originally there was no barbecue. No meat for dinner. In the next verse, he gives the animals the same command. He said, I give you green plants for food. Even the animals, I give you plants for food. So if we take the Bible as it's clearly written, both man and animal were originally what? Yeah, vegetarian, which, by the way, comes from an ancient Hebrew term that means bad hunter. So, but originally, the very good world means that there was no death of man or animals. Now, wait, last night you guys are thinking, you're reading this verse and going, uh-oh, did I sin, you know? Because you might have had some dead cow or dead chicken or something like that. Makes you wonder when you see a sign like this. But I want to let you know that there's no reason to feel guilty. Because later on in Genesis 9, God said, just as I gave you green plants for food, I now give you everything for food. And by the way, that's biblical justification to eat these things. Okay, some of you got it. There's the everything. If you did get it, wait until after the service. You can tell the joke to your neighbor and explain it to him. So anyhow, so let's go back here. A very good world, there's no sin and no death, right? Now, it's hard for us to imagine something like that. But it's consistent with the Bible and the future paradise that describes where lion will eat, will lie with the lamb. Now, where do we find the gospel in the New Testament? Or where do we find the gospel? Thank you. But did you know that the foundation of the gospel is found where? Any guess? In Genesis. In Genesis 2:17, God warned Adam and Eve. He said, when you eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, you will surely what? Die. You see, man sinned. He disobeyed God. And this is where death came into that perfect world. And where do we see that evidence of death? In the fossils. In fact, did you know that there's a science called paleopathology that looks at the fossil record and finds evidence of disease and cancer in those dead things? Now, does anybody here think that disease, cancer, suffering and death is what God meant when he said it was very good? You see, when we mesh the millions of years into the Bible, we get a massive theological problem. The Bible is very clear that a very good world, there was no death before the fall and before sin. And if we squeeze those millions of years of death and suffering before Adam, we actually turn the gospel upside down. In order to understand the gospel of Jesus Christ and why he died on the cross to pay the penalty of the curse of death that happened back in Genesis, we must first understand original sin, the fall, and the curse, and know that those are real and actual events. It's interesting that atheists seem to understand this issue better than we do. Here's an atheist with a debate and a Christian. Listen to what he said. He said, the most devastating thing, though, that biology did to Christianity was the discovery of biological evolution. Listen to his words. Now that we know that Adam and Eve were never real people, the central myth of Christianity is destroyed. If there never was an Adam and Eve, there never was original sin. And if there never was an original sin, there's no need of salvation. And if there's no need of salvation, there's no need of a Savior. I submit that puts Jesus, historical or otherwise, into the ranks of the unemployed. I think evolution is absolutely the death knell of Christianity. Think he gets it? It's important. Did you know that Genesis is also the foundation of many Christian doctrines? For example, the doctrine of marriage. Now, the world is trying to redefine the meaning of marriage, especially in my home state of California. But where do we find the original definition of marriage? Huh? All right, you're right. In fact, Jesus, when he was speaking of marriage, he said, haven't you read, at the beginning, the Creator made them male and female? And when Jesus was seeing this, he was reading from where? Genesis. And by the way, he was taking Genesis literally when he said that, right? But listen to what he said. He said, at the beginning, God created people. At the beginning, God created people. But evolution says that no, after a primordial soup gave birth to a simple amoeba, then a more complex amoeba, and finally, after hundreds and millions of years, finally, at the end of that process, he made man and woman. No, Jesus, taking Genesis as it's plainly written, said that God created man and woman at the beginning. Do you see the difference here? They're not compatible. Evolution does not fit into the Bible. And a lot of people go, well, wait, don't cause division. The millions of years are okay. Why should we limit God to how he created? I've heard that all the time. But maybe what we should do is allow God to tell us how he created. Here's a man who caused a huge division in the church. When he said, when Moses writes that God created heaven and earth and whatever is in them in 6 days, if you cannot understand how this could have been done in 6 days, then grant the Holy Spirit the honor of being more learned than you are. Amen. For you are to deal with Scripture in such a way that you bear in mind that God himself says what is written. But since God is speaking, it is not fitting for you wantonly to turn his word in the direction you wish to go. Now, maybe the nature of our culture could be best stated by a more modern theologian of who you might be aware. When Bruce Willis made this astute observation, he said, unfortunately, listen to his words, unfortunately, with what we know about science, anyone who believes at all probably doesn't believe in fire and brimstone anymore. He's talking about the Bible. So organized religion has lost that voice to hold up their moral hand. What's he saying? Now that we know that science has proven that the Bible's biology, geology, and astronomy, and even history is wrong, then the morality which is also contained in the biblical text must also be wrong. So you Christians, you have no right to tell me what I can and can't do. And by implication, he's also saying you have lost the right to proclaim the gospel, which is also contained in the biblical text. Sound important? You know, there's a battle going on between two worldviews right now. How many people here with a show of hands claim to stand on the solid rock of the Bible, God's Word? That's our foundation, but you know what? The evolutionists, they're clever. Guess where their attacks are aimed? Look out there in the media. They're attacking this very foundation, especially in Genesis, when it comes to this whole origins issue of evolution. And they figure if they can get the foundation here, what's going to happen to the structure? Right? What happens? It crumbles. You know, it's interesting that the Christians, even some Christians themselves, are helping the evolutionists attack our foundation by saying, you know what? The millions of years, it's okay. It's not real history. It's allegory. It's metaphor. But you can take and leave certain parts of the Bible. They're damaging our own foundation when they do that. You see, on the other hand, oftentimes Christians aim at the symptoms of that evolutionary worldview. Okay? Not at the foundation. Even if we change the laws, okay, what's going to happen? That next generation is going to change the laws back. What do we need to do? We need to change the heart of the people. And how can we do that? This is the way. Through God's Word, we need to first rebuild that damaged foundation. And to show both our kids, our family, our friend, and the unsaved people that we're trying to reach, that the Bible is indeed reliable history that can be backed up by science, reason, and logic. Now, this rebuilding, it takes work. It's not easy. Okay? And that's why we are here today. We want to give you the tools that it takes to rebuild the foundation, but also, instead of aiming at these, at the symptoms, to aim right there at that foundation of evolution. And I'll tell you today, it's an easy target. We want to help you demolish the arguments that are set up against our kids, our culture, to know the true Creator, who is Jesus Christ. Then, when they can know Jesus in His mercy took the penalty of death that we deserve, then He can restore their hearts. That's why we do this. Now, today I've only given you a taste. There's many more questions and challenges that our kids face, both the believers and the non-believers. But are you equipped with answers to some of these questions? I want to give you an opportunity, a practical way to become prepared through tools and even ammunition. This is our number one resource, Creation Magazine. Okay, it's been around for over 30 years. It goes out to 110 countries. It's the most read creation publication in the world. Quality publication, 56 pages. We're not in it for the money because there's no paid advertisement in here, so it's completely thing. And the best of all, it's really easy to understand, I promise. Now, how many people here get magazines at home? You know, about hobbies, passions? This is a life-changing magazine. I know it changed my life, and I've seen many lives get changed when they find out that the Bible can be taken as it's clearly written. It's a resource like no other in the world. It comes to your house every 3 months. It's great. Now, I'm going to have these sign-up sheets passed out here in a moment. And this isn't to give any pressure or anything, because this is our best and most popular resource that we get today. So I want to explain what you're going to do. If you want to become equipped with the scientific answers, and what you do is fill out on the left both your name and address, check whether you want a one-year or three-year subscription, and then pull that little coupon off right there, okay? Keep that with you. And then go back to the back room here after service. All right? And if I want to let you know, if you do get a one-year subscription today, you will get a free back issue to take home with you today so you can start learning this stuff right this afternoon. If you get a three-year subscription, you not only get a free back issue, but you also get a free DVD. This DVD has a $1.5 million budget. It is equal to or better than PBS quality documentaries that you see today. An amazing documentary. You get that free if you get a three-year subscription. So why don't you guys go ahead and pass those sign-up sheets out. And as you do that, go ahead and fill that out. And as I said, keep the coupon. But while he's doing this, I want to give you some examples of things that are in this magazine. All right? So listen to some of the stuff that you can find out. Okay? Once again, you know, when we are promoting these resources, I want you to understand it's because we have a passion, because we want you guys to become equipped so that you can share with the culture. How about carbon dating? Anybody heard about carbon dating here? Radioisotope dating? You know, people tell me, well, now there's hardcore evidence for the millions of years and billions of years, right? But in Creation Magazine, we had some samples that were taken from a volcanic lava dome, all right? And what they did is they used what's called the potassium-argon radioactive dating method. And they got an age from the whole sample of 350,000 years, all right? Now pay attention. They extracted a mineral from that same exact sample, and this time they got an age of 900,000 years. They took another mineral from that exact same sample from that same volcano, and they got a different age of 1.7 to 2.8 million years, all from the same sample. So which one was right? You see, the sample was taken from Mount St. Helens, and that rock formed only 10 years before it was tested. So if we get incorrect radioisotope dates of rocks of known age, knowing that it was 10 years old, does it bring into question the radioactive isotope dates of rocks of unknown age? There is a lot of exciting research that's in Creation Magazine that shows that radioactive decay rates actually prove that the Earth is actually young, not old, as we're being told. Here's another example. Take a look at this fellow. You guys know who this is, right? Okay. Charles Darwin made a logical implication through evolution, saying some races were superior to others. Let me ask you a question. How many skin colors are there? Shout it out. All right, well, let me ask you this question. What skin color am I? What am I?
White.
White, okay. This piece of paper is white. Am I white? Yeah, I'm a very light brown. There's even a little bit of pink showing through because I don't have a lot of color in my skin, so even the blood color kind of comes through. But you want to know what science tells us? There's actually a dark pigment that you may have heard of. It's called melanin. Has anybody heard of melanin? Okay. Guess who has melanin in their skin? Every single person on the planet. There's this one dark pigment. So let me ask you the question again. How many skin colors are there? One. We just have different amounts of melanin, but it's all the same color. Isn't that cool? If you get Creation Magazine, you'd be able to find here two-tone twins, born from the same parents at the exact same time. Okay? Those two girls are the same color. How many races are there if we take the Bible as it's clearly written? One, because we've all descended from one man and one woman. And genetics, science has now proven that we are way more than 99% genetically identical. Culture is what separates alleged races from each other, not a biblical understanding of where races came from. There's a lot of evidence that supports this whole idea of a young Earth, including new discoveries. And I'm going to share one with you right now that's going to blow your mind. Recently, Dr. Mary Schweitzer, who is an evolutionist from Montana State University, made a discovery that was beyond belief. In T. rex bones, she found red blood cells. In a dinosaur that's allegedly a minimum of 65 million years old. Think about that for a moment. She said it was exactly like looking at a slice of modern bone, but of course, I couldn't believe it. Listen to her words. I said to the lab technician, the bones, after all, are 65 million years old. How could blood cells survive that long? Years later, they dissolved the bony matrix and they found unfossilized, soft, fibrous tissue that was flexible and resilient and, when stretched, returned to its original shape. Transparent blood vessels where you could squeeze out liquid contents. She said it was totally shocking. I didn't believe it until we'd done it 17 times. You know, I have people telling me, creationists, you reject observational scientific evidence. You know, but before we judge her too firmly, her first reaction was to question the evidence, not her belief in millions of years. And you know, that's really understandable when you believe something strongly. But I have another interpretation of the evidence that I think makes more sense. The dinosaur bones are not 65 million years old. If you've liked what you've heard today, okay, and you have a friend or family member that would like to have a talk like this given in your church, please see me, you know, after at the book tables back there. Speaking of the book tables, we have these free tracts here. I hope we do. If not, we'll try to find them. And, of course, our website, as we said, is free, which is?
Grace.com.
Right. And here, there are some books. This book is actually read right now, but it's, this is, the. If you're going to buy any one book, this would be the one. This is the top 60 questions that people ask after our presentations about regarding carbon dating, plate tectonics, Noah and the Ark, the Ice Age, ape men, dinosaurs, and my favorite question, where did Cain get his wife when he wasn't able? Or if you're new to the subject, get this intro pack, which includes not only that book, but also Refuting Evolution, which is the best-selling creation book ever written. Okay, if you have somebody that's going into high school or college, or you're curious to find out, is evolution a valid argument? This would be the book to get. And in this pack, you get that plus a DVD. Or you can get the refuting pack, which included refuting compromise, which, Pastor, if you don't have that, you need to get that one. Maybe one of you guys can buy that book for him. It looks at the compromising worldviews that are prevalent out there, whether it be progressive creationism, theistic evolution, day-age theory. It's not a children's book. This is a heavy book. And if you want to read what's in that big, fat book, in a little tiny book, here's the Reader's Digest version, 15 Reasons to Take Genesis as History. And this book is literally hot off the press. It's less than a year old. You guys heard of Richard Dawkins? Anybody? He's the most famous evolutionist in the world today. And he did us a favor by writing his book, The Greatest Show of Earth, that finally puts out the evidence for evolution on display for everybody to deal. But here in The Greatest Hoax on Earth, we take each chapter page by page and refute everything that he's saying. We even have a book on dating. Well, okay, not that kind of dating. But radioisotope. It takes a technical topic and makes it easy to understand. And we also have DVDs here. So, in fact, if you buy four, you get one free. 20 years ago, resources like this did not exist. This is an exciting time to be a Christian. But I have an important question to ask you as we close today. Are you willing to become that rescuer? Will you commit yourself today to become equipped to reach your kids, your unsaved family members, your friends, and our culture with the good news that the Bible can be taken as it's written? Are you ready to fulfill this command? Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you.